So for the pure devotees, there is no question there can ever be separation from Krishna. And similarly, for Krishna, there's never separation from his, from those devotees who have surrendered their lives to him. Thus, to hear the glories of great devotees is as purifying and instructive as directly hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna teaches the world through his devotees. And there are different classes of people who must be taught in different ways how to achieve the ultimate perfection of life. And therefore, Krishna, through varieties of devotees who live in various lifestyles, Krishna teaches the world how to become perfect through his various avatars. Just like we read of Kolavecha Sridhar. He was very simple, very poor man. There are many simple poor people in this world who do not have proper clothes, who do not have proper house, who are lean and thin because they're not even getting much food, who are ridiculed by the wealthy people of society for being useless, unproductive. Yet Kolavecha Sridhar demonstrated by his example, or should we say the Lord revealed through him, how one could be the absolutely most perfect human being and Vaishnava. One can be ecstatic in love of God and literally purchase the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his simple devotion, even in that situation. Great, great kings and multi-millionaires, they cannot purchase Krishna. But Kolavecha Sridhar, he purchased Krishna. Lord Chaitanya showed him his own divine opulences. He would personally come to accept his banana leaves. Every day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ate off the banana leaves given by Kolavecha Sridhar. Every day he would eat the pumpkin or squash that grew wild on the thatched grass roof of the home of Kolavecha Sridhar. And before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the world of Navadvip to take sannyas, the last thing he ate was a preparation made of that squash. It was made into sweet rice by Sachimata that Kolavecha Sridhar gave him. So the Lord taught through him how one can be so simple and in such a poverty-stricken condition and yet not be greedy, not be eager for anything but devotional service. To pleasing him, to serving him in every possible way. His life at every moment was simply a meditation on serving Sri Ram, pleasing Sri Ram, protecting Sri Ram from any inconvenience that could possibly come in this world. And Shatrughna had the same type of devotion and dedication to Bharat. The four brothers began to grow. And as they grow, they simply conquer the hearts of all the city of Ayodhya, especially the mothers and Dasarath Maharaj. One day, the great sage Vishwamitra came to the court of King Dasarath. And although Dasarath Maharaj was the king of all the world, he always felt himself to be the most humble servant of the great devotees of the Lord. This is the quality of a great person. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said in this regard that a great person
who has abundance of good qualities is just like a tree that has abundance of very ripe fruits. That tree will bend very low. It will never stand up straight. Similarly, a real great soul is always bowing down to others and taking a humble position. He will never stand straight to exalt his own qualities. And according to real culture, the Kshatriyas were always humble and submissive to the great devotees who were learned in the science of the Absolute Truth. So when Vishwamitra came into the court of Maharaj Dasarath, Dasarath Maharaj sat him on his own throne and washed his feet. And with his own hands, as well as with his ministers and servants and queens, they were serving him in every possible way. In fact, Dasarath Maharaj offered his entire kingdom to Vishwamitra Muni. And this is why the kingdom of Ayodhya was so blissful, so happy, because of a king like this, who is genuinely the well-wisher of all. So after Dasarath offered, "How can I serve you?" Vishwamitra Muni requested a service that Dasarath Maharaj did not expect. He said that there are terrible demons, Subahu and Maricha, who are contaminating my sacrifices in the forest. And they are so powerful that no ordinary living being can stop them. But I know someone who can stop them, your son Ram. I want you to give me Ram and Lakshman to come to the forest for some time to kill these terrible demons. When Dasarath heard this, it was unbelievable. He was just a child, hardly in his teenage years. And although he was the all-powerful personality of Godhead, due to fatherly affection, Dasarath simply saw him as a son who was depending on his fatherly affection for survival. Besides, he was a prince. He was accustomed to living in the luxuries of the palace of the kingdom of Ayodhya. How could he live in the dangerous forest fighting against Rakshasas? Dasarath Maharaj replied that, "I will go myself, and I promise you I will bring an entire Akshohini division of soldiers, and I will kill those demons, but let Ram stay here. Tell me about who are these demons? Who are they working under?" And Vishwamitra Muni explained, "They are working under the order of Ravana, that great Rakshasa who is plaguing the universe." And when Dasarath heard the name of Ravana, it struck a thunderbolt of fear in his heart. He said, "No one can stand before Ravana. Even Indra, the king of heaven, cannot stand in his presence." Vishwamitra Muni insisted, "You have given your word. A Kshatriya will never go back on his word of honor. If he
hears what most people take 60 or 70 years to live, we really tried hard to find some pleasure in material things. And then, having joined the Krishna consciousness movement and having traveled extensively all over the world, sometimes people think that there's no happiness in India because there's so much poverty and it's very, it's not, the cities are certainly not very clean. Actually, many of the villages are very, very clean. If you compare Calcutta City with the villages in Bengal, it's like day and night. But for the most part, when people come to India, they see it as a poverty-stricken, unclean, miserable place where it's not possible to be happy. But if you travel around the world, as I have done, from so many, every different culture, Australia, Africa, Soviet, former Soviet Union, China, I lived in China, Japan, everywhere. You see, basically, it's the same standard everywhere, just a relative adjustment. There are poor people and there are wealthy people, and mostly poor, and it's a struggle for existence. So it's been my experience, and if I could have found some happiness, I would have opted for it. But I saw that there was no hope. If you extrapolate in mathematics, in arithmetic, well, mathematics actually, arithmetic, they don't teach you algebra, but, or statistical analysis, but you can, if you draw a graph and create a curve on the graph based on certain data, then you'll reach a point at the end of your data where you can guess, because the trend has been like this, you can guess over here it will be the same curve. You can guess in the future what the result will be, even though you don't have statistics to prove it now. So we can see that no one has achieved happiness in the material world in the past. No one is happy right now. So we can extrapolate that if we go on doing the same things that we've always been doing, then we're just going to get the same results. It's lunacy, madness, to expect that our generation will be different than the last generation. If we just go on eating, sleeping, mating, and defending with no qualitative change in our life, quantity won't do it. You know, if I get, you know, so much satisfaction with one rasgulla, if I get 50 rasgullas, is it really going to make me that much more happy? No. Just increasing the quantity of the same thing won't bring me satisfaction. So, fool that I am, I have figured this much out. Now, the next stage, where to go from here, I'm greatly anticipating and expecting to hear the answer from Jayadvaita Swami. And therefore, I'm going to pass the Bhagavatam over to him.
Timinandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Sthapitam Jina Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dathati Shapadantikam. Well, if there's one flowering tree, then Chanakya Pandit says that the whole forest can become fragrant. So, I don't know in Hindi, but in Bengali, a flower is also called phool.
Yeah.
So on those grounds, we can accept Sridhar Swami as a great fool.
I don't mind being a fool as long as I can adorn Jai Advaita Swami's neck.
Yeah! I'm just the thorn. So, yascha mudhatamo loke yascha buddhe param gataha tavu bho sukamedhete Krishyat yantarito janaha. The Paramhansas and the fools are happy. But those who are in the middle are conscious that something is wrong with their life. Therefore, this is the beginning of human life or spiritual advancement, to inquire, just as Sanatana Goswami inquired, Kene Jara Tapa Troy, why are these threefold miseries always giving me trouble? This is the beginning of human intelligence. The fools are satisfied. There was a good example of some fool. Prabhupada here in Bombay, he was speaking at, I think, last Bombay Pandal festival, where he personally attended. And some learned fellow got up in the audience and said that, so if we become a dog or a tree, what's wrong there? Because if I become a dog, then I'll have the consciousness of a dog, and I'll enjoy as a dog. So what's wrong? What's wrong with that? So Srila Prabhupada answered that if it's not wrong, then it's all right. But we do not think that kind of life is very nice. We do not think that kind of life is very nice. Under the modes of passion and ignorance, one thinks that he's happy while he's suffering. Prabhupada gives the example of the camel who chews on thorny twigs and enjoys, well, these twigs are very tasty. Actually, he's tasting his own blood because the thorn is cutting his tongue. But he's thinking, these twigs are very tasty. Similarly, Prabhupada emphasizes here those who are falsely enjoying this sex happiness, they're mudhatamo, fool number one. In the Bhagavad Gita, their vision of the living beings in the three modes of nature is described. The person in the mode of goodness sees everything in the proper perspective. The person in the mode of passion is confused. He has a hard time making out what is what. And the person in the mode of ignorance gets everything backwards. What's up, he thinks is down. What's good, he thinks is bad. What's religious, he thinks is sinful. What's sinful, he thinks is religious. What's enjoyment, he thinks is suffering. What's suffering, he thinks is enjoyment. This is the mode of ignorance. So in the mode of ignorance, one is going on enjoying how he's suffering. He's inflicting suffering upon himself, and he's thinking, this is nice. Literally, therefore, it's a a soul-killing civilization. They're killing themselves. And why are they killing themselves? For happiness. Working very hard in the mode of passion, the symptom is that one works very hard. So they're working very hard for sense gratification, the other symptom of the mode of passion. For sense enjoyment, they're working very hard. Work is not very enjoyable, to work like an ass, but they're doing it to be happy. And that happiness is also not happiness. What is that? Rajasas tu palam dukkham. The fruit of happiness, the fruit of the mode of passion is suffering, not happiness. Rajasas tu palam dukkham. Therefore, the fools are satisfied. To be satisfied in material existence is the symptom of a great fool. Prabhupada gives another example, that outside the slaughterhouse, the chickens or sheep, they're pecking at some food, and they're thinking everything is all right. Or sometimes outside the slaughterhouse, they're having sex. Then they're happy, everything's all right. And they don't consider that where are all my friends going? The numbers are decreasing. So this one is gone, that one is gone, this one is gone, that one is gone. Where are they all going? He has no intelligence to understand that everyone is being slaughtered, therefore I'm also next to be slaughtered. No, some food is there, it's nice. Some sex is there, it's nice. He's a great fool. Great at mudhatamo. Mudhatamo means superlatively foolish. Superlatively foolish. Therefore, someone has said, better to be Socrates dissatisfied than a fool satisfied. Socrates means that he's inquiring, what is the business of life? What is this world? Who am I? Why am I here? What is my business? And the fool, his business is only how my senses will be satisfied and die like a dog. So dissatisfaction is good for spiritual advancement. This is the problem with the heavenly planets. They're too satisfied. We've got our beautiful bodies, we've got our beautiful girlfriends, we've got our somaras, we've got this. How it's nice. So then making spiritual advancement is difficult. Bhogai sharya prasaktanam taya parita chetasam. Very difficult. And in hell it's also very difficult because there's so much suffering that one can hardly think about any spiritual progress, simply suffering terribly. But this Martyaloka, the planets in the middle, are advantageous for spiritual advancement because there's a suitable mixture of suffering and enjoyment. A little enjoyment is there, but to get that little enjoyment, one has to suffer like anything. So finally, an intelligent person will ask himself, that why am I suffering so much? Why am I working so hard to enjoy and not enjoying? Intelligent person has to ask. So this is called brahmajigyasa, or spiritual inquiry. And this is the beginning of human life. Without spiritual inquiry, there's no human life. The spiritual inquiry is the beginning. Let me understand why I'm suffering. Then still he'll not understand. He'll speculate. He'll philosophize. He'll invent something. He'll rationalize. He'll tell himself that, yes, that so often they'll say, yes, We have to be philosophical and take the good with the bad, because that's life. That's life. We just have to accept it. And then they go on trying to enjoy and suffering. Their enjoyment probably compares to sweet rice mixed with sand. You take your nice sweet rice and you put a spoon of sand in, mix it up, and you take the good with the bad. And you say, that's life. But human life is not for that. Human life means that I should ask myself that I don't want to suffer. Why am I forced to suffer? I don't want to get old, I don't want to get diseased, I don't want to die. Why am I being forced? Still he'll not understand. Still he'll not understand. But if one comes in touch with a pure devotee of Krishna, if one comes in touch with the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, then he'll understand. Otherwise he thinks, I have to make some adjustment. Or he thinks that I'm suffering because I've got an ego, and my ego is the source of desire, and the desire is the source of suffering. So if I snuff out my ego, then there'll be no more desires and no more suffering. He doesn't think that then I'll be finished. And what kind of life is that? But out of frustration, so much frustrated, that let me cancel my individual existence just to get out of the suffering. So by mental speculation, either one thinks somehow I can enjoy, or he thinks let me become zero, or he thinks life is meant for suffering, or he speculates that unless there was suffering, how could you know what enjoyment is? If that's your philosophy, then why don't you go out and suffer lots and lots so that you can enjoy more? So many ideas they'll have. But if he comes in touch with the pure devotee of Krishna, then by the influence of Krishna's internal potency, he can understand that I'm suffering because I've forgotten my relationship with Krishna. And actually I'm Krishna's part and parcel. And having forgotten Krishna, I'm suffering in this material world. Ayi nanda tunuja kinkuram patitam mam vishame bhavambudo. I'm your eternal servant, but I'm under the illusion that I'm the master. And as the so-called master, I'm drowning in the ocean of material existence. Kripaya tavapada pankajastitadhuli sadrisham vijinta. You please engage me in your devotional service so that I can be properly situated in Krishna consciousness. As soon as we're in Krishna consciousness, then every problem is actually our business is to serve Krishna. Getting out of material misery is a secondary business. But our real business is how to revive our relationship with Krishna. And when we revive that relationship with Krishna, then all the miseries are automatically finished. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also sings that you're drowning in this ocean of material existence. As soon as you accept that you're Krishna's servant, then there's no more misery. There's no more misery. Those who are the Paramahansas, they've understood that. Paramahansa means that they're always absorbed in thinking of Krishna. So how much enjoyment they're getting, the materialist can't even imagine. He's eating his garbage. He's getting pleasure in the business of the cats and dogs. He's simply trying to extract some pleasure from the senses, from the skin, from the tongue, from this, from that. Somehow he's trying to get some pleasure out of that because he's a fool. He can't even imagine how much pleasure there is in chanting Hare Krishna and serving Krishna. You can't even imagine. Even the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, are supposed to be in the ocean of some sort of ocean of pleasure. Therefore, we find that their names so often, they have Anand names. Sadanand, Satyanand, Pramanand, this Anand, Anand, Anand. But where is their Anand? They've extinguished their individual identity, or not even they've extinguished. Philosophically, their idea is that I'll finish off my individuality. And then where's Anand? If there's no individual, who's going to enjoy that Anand? Or, because that's impractical and they can't even attain that so-called oneness, then they come back down to material life for philanthropic activities without any spiritual... They say, Brahma satya jagan mitya, the absolute is real, the material world is false, and then they get busy in welfare activities, serving the country. Bharat seva. Why? Because they have no clue as to what actual Anand is. Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. He's the Satchidananda Vigraha. And one who comes in touch with Krishna by devotional service is situated in Anandam Buddhi Bardhana, the ever-increasing ocean of bliss. The happiness of the materialist decreases. He gets some happiness, some little happiness, and then gradually it becomes stale. It's like stale bread, you know, after it's left for a week. Then it's tasteless. The material, the happiness of the materialist is pathetic, it's tasteless. It's gradually stolen away from him. Whatever illusion of happiness he has, whatever little something he has is stolen away. In his old age, what will he enjoy sex life? Still Prabhupada used to see, because our temple in Paris was not in a very good quarter at one time. So Prabhupada would look out his window and he would see so many prostitutes walking in the streets, or so many clubs. And the old Frenchmen, old men, are going after those prostitutes, or they're going to that club, paying big money also. And what will they enjoy? So this is called Maya. Trying to enjoy Durashaya Ye Bahirarthamadina. Trying to enjoy where there's no enjoyment to be had. So Krishna is requesting that give up all your nonsense attempts for living very nicely in this material world. I have my house, I have my wife, I have my son, I have my daughter, I have my money, I have my car. I have my this, I have my that, everything is all right. It means I'm increasing my foolishness. Like Prabhupada gives the example, that the boatman is working very hard. He's pulling the boat, there's some canal, and the boat has to go through the canal, so a rope is tied to a post on the boat, and the man is walking, carrying that rope. He's walking and pulling the boat. So someone is thinking that if I ever become a rich man, then I'll line the shore of this canal with pillows, so that when I pull the rope, when I pull the boat, my feet will not be pricked with thorns. This is their idea of happiness, that somehow my material life, while I'm riding through the traffic in Bombay, I'll be able to talk on my cellular phone. then my life will be nice. Huh? Any little nonsense. Like children with some toys. Children are fools. And adults are also fools. Oh, everyone who doesn't surrender to Krishna is a fool. Namam duskrita namudhat prapadyante naradhama maya pritagana asura bhavamashrita. Krishna says, come back to me. Come back to Godhead. You won't have to work. You won't have to pay taxes. Now, end of the year, everyone has to pay taxes. Why pay taxes? Why not just go back to Godhead? You'll never have to pay taxes again. No, let me stay here and pay taxes. No. Krishna says the intelligent person, Mahatmanas Tumam Partha Daivam Prakritim Ashrita. Pajantyananya manaso gatva bhutana mariya. They engage in the happiness that's found in the internal energy. The materialists are chasing after the reflection of happiness, the external energy. And the devotees are getting the real thing. So those who are in the middle, they're feeling pricked by suffering. So they either look below to those who are happy without any spiritual understanding, or if they're fortunate, they'll look above. Where are those, what are those Hare Krishna people enjoying? Let me find out. So paramhansas and fools, one shouldn't be a fool. One should follow in the line of the paramhansas, chant Hare Krishna, revive one's relationship with Krishna, and be happy in Krishna consciousness.
Hare Krishna.
Much. Srila Prabhupada has given example. If one is in such a deeply intoxicated state that one is not even conscious of his own well-being, that person, even in a suffering condition, thinks that he or she is happy. And if you try to help that person will actually fight with you verbally and sometimes physically to maintain his suffering condition. For those of you who have seen somebody very much drunken on alcohol or some terrible drugs, sometimes they're laying on the street, they're suffering terribly, and you say, please, let me help you. And he says, no, 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 I am happy. He may even be laughing. His body is bleeding and bruised, filthy, dirty and an abominable situation, saying, no, no, I am very happy. And if you sometimes try to help him, he will even physically fight with you to defend his right to be in that situation. So to a sober person, this situation is lamentable. It is pitiable. Brings tears to the eyes, the degradation of such a person's life. However, when one becomes sober, one realizes, I am in a suffering condition and I need help to get out. This material world has been created by Krishna to ultimately make one sober. Srila Prabhupada explained, the beginning of spiritual life is when you realize that you are suffering in this world and you try to find a real alternative to material sense gratification. Human life begins when we inquire into how to come out of the miseries of material existence. Atato brahma jigyasa. Now that you have achieved this rare, precious human life, durlabha manava janma lobhya samsare, it is so rare. Generally, the spirit soul has to evolve through 8 million species of life, suffering birth, old age, disease, and death in each and every one of them, having all of our relatives, our physical health, our very life, and all of our possessions forcibly stripped away from us by time. Material enjoyment is compared in the Bhagavatam to a deep, dark well. And living in that well is a huge, all-devouring, poisonous serpent that at any moment is going to devour us. And yet we're trying to find lasting peace and happiness in this dark well. And the great Paramahamsas are throwing a rope down to us saying, please, take this rope, I will bring you out of this well. But we are so much conditioned and habituated to this condition of life that we say, no, why are you disturbing me? I do not have time. I am so busy. Human life begins when we inquire, what is beyond this material world? What is spiritual existence? What is my relationship with God? Until then, Srimad Bhagavatam declares that human existence is two-legged animals. A human being is meant to use his or her intelligence to understand what is real happiness. And we learn so much from the animals. In order to come above the animalistic state of consciousness, we can learn much from the animals. How they're being trapped by the illusory energy. The original commentator of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Sridhar Swami, he describes that there are five animals we could learn so much from. Indriyanam hicharatam yanmanodabhidhyate tadasyaharati pragya vayurnavamivambasi. Even one of the senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Just as a boat on the ocean is swept away by a strong wind. This example is given in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. It's very, very interesting because this material existence is compared to an ocean. It is the ocean of birth and death. And it is very, very difficult to cross over this ocean. However, the human form of life is the boat which is meant to bring us across this ocean of birth and death to the shore of eternity, knowledge, and real happiness. So here we are on the ocean of birth and death, in the boat of human existence, which we've been living like a fish for so many species of life. Now we have boarded the boat of human existence. It is explained that the spiritual master, he is the captain of that boat. And the Vedic knowledge is like the favorable breezes. The spiritual master knows how to keep us always moving forward due to the influence of the favorable breezes of the knowledge that Krishna has given. However, there is so much other knowledge. There are so many other breezes and winds that are unfavorable. So much propaganda, so much literature, so much so-called education and influences blowing like the wind. the spiritual master is meant to protect us from all of those breezes. How? By learning to teaching us how to tolerate them. Keep our consciousness fixed on the favorable breezes of Vedic knowledge. However, if we allow our consciousness to be influenced by the unfavorable breezes of so-called mundane knowledge, then the boat sinks in the ocean of material existence, suffers terribly. Krishna explains, even one of the senses in which the mind focuses can spoil our human existence. So Sridhar Maharaj explains how we can learn from the lower species, how they are living and how we should not live. First is the moth. The moth tries to find pleasure through his eyes. He's always eager to see something very beautiful. And what is beautiful for the moth? The sight of fire. Fire is so inviting. It looks so warm and so brilliant, effulgent. Fire is self-effulgent. To a moth, the sight of fire is the essence of beauty. And he wants to enjoy that beauty. So he will, his whole consciousness is fixed on somehow or other attaining the fire. And we have seen how moths, even if there is a light and they're somehow prevented from coming to that light, they will do anything to get above, below, or through that obstacle. I remember when I was a little boy, I was thinking, how crazy are these moths? We used to have a place where we would keep a fire in our house, and we would have windows in the house. And all these moths were so eager to get to that fire that sometimes they would be flying full speed ahead into the window, trying to crash through to somehow get to that fire. Back and forth, they're just poop, poop, again and again and again. And each time they're just banging their heads against the window, trying to crash through. And I was thinking, what a stupid moth. And then somehow or other, by their brilliant creative intelligence, they get through. And then they go into the fire and they are burned to ashes. Then I looked around and I noticed that the whole civilization I'm living in is just like this moth. We're working so hard. As Srila Jayadvaita Maharaj explained, going through rush hour traffic, standing in so many crowded trains, beating our heads again and again and again, trying to get more and more facility for material happiness. And the result is, we are simply burned to ashes by that very material happiness. The moth is killed by his desire to enjoy looking at something beautiful. Similarly, the death of the body is not a very big problem, because it is inevitable. The death we should all fear is the death of our propensity for self-realization and service to God. That is worse than death. The very propensity of the soul's nature to love God, to serve God, to be in the liberated condition of eternal joy. Just because we want to see something beautiful of this material world, we are killing that very propensity, our own spiritual instincts. And we are beating our head against the glass, fighting against all obstacles, just so we can enter into that fire. Then there is the bee. There are different types of bees, Srimad Bhagavatam describes, and we could learn various lessons from them. One bee is very much eager to enjoy smelling fragrances. Somehow the bee has very, very been created, although so small, has such an advanced technology for smelling. Better than us. We may think we're such elevated species of life, but from the sensory platform, we're not very elevated. Human existence is not a very good life as far as the senses go. With your eyes, how much can you see? You can see some distance away, and then things start getting blurry. And as you get older, you can't even see without big glasses. And every year, the glasses get thicker and thicker and thicker. Spectacles, not very good seeing. But Srila Prabhupada explains, vulture, such good vision. The eagle and the vulture, they could be miles in the sky and they can see exactly whenever there's a dead corpse falling. Can you see miles away? They could literally see miles away. And even when they get old, they don't have to wear spectacles. So who's better at enjoying seeing, you or the vulture? Whether we have spectacles or not spectacles, we're meant to use our eyes for purification. If we're looking for sense gratification, whether we have big bifocals or whether we have 20/20 vision, we are just following in the path of the vultures. Just looking for some dead material enjoyment. And as far as smelling, how much can we smell? The police force, when they're looking for a criminal, they will get their bloodhounds. Bloodhound means dogs. And they'll just have that person, that dog person, smell a little piece of clothes from that criminal, and even miles away he'll be able to trace him out. Why don't the policemen trace him out by going because they can't. If they need someone with good smelling power, they have to take shelter of a dog. They cannot do it themselves because they have no such smelling power. We could smell something a little distance away, but how dogs and hogs and other animals, bees, they can smell something blocks and blocks and blocks away and somehow or other achieve it. How do you think little ants come into your house when you drop sugar on the floor? They don't see that the sugar has dropped. Somehow or other, they could smell it or something from long distance away. Then they have a whole network of communication. So humans' smelling power is quite useless compared to the animals. And as far as hearing, dogs are better than us too. When we were a little boy, one of my relatives gave me a gift called a dog whistle. Have you seen dog whistle? You blow it and you can't hear it, but all the dogs start going. When your neighbor has a dog and you want to wake them up in the middle of the night, we used to do like this. In America, everyone has dogs. So we play, and if we play and somehow the neighbor says, get off our lawn, you are disturbing our lawn, then we would think, just see what will happen to you. Then about 1 in the morning,
We would blow the dog whistle. Not, nobody, even in my own house, nobody hears. But then, we cannot sleep. So what does that mean? Dogs have better hearing than humans, as far as a spectrum of sound vibration that they can pick up through their ears. And as far as eating, we all know elephants, how much they can eat. How much can you eat? If you eat too much, you're in anxiety. If you eat too little, you're in anxiety. When do you ever eat just the right amount? Very difficult. The tongue just doesn't want you to eat just the right amount. If it's not enough, the tongue is saying, suffer, suffer until you give me more. And if you eat too much, then the belly is saying, what have you done, you fool? When are we satisfied? And even if we are satisfied, we've just, by some inconceivable arrangement, we've eaten just the right amount, and we're thinking, I'm totally satisfied. Then all of a sudden, you have to run to the bathroom. And a few minutes later, again, you're hungry. There's no satisfaction. But the elephant can just eat, 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 all day long, eat, and be satisfied. Not satisfied that he's actually happy, but satisfied that he could just go on eating. If he was satisfied, he wouldn't have to eat. But he's thinking. So any of the senses, the animal species have much better power than ourselves. The bee has such a nice power to smell. The bee goes from one flower to the next, trying to enjoy the fragrance of that flower. However, if the bee becomes attached to any particular fragrance and stays in that flower too long, the lotus flower, as explained, has the nicest fragrance. But at the time of sunset, the lotus flower closes, and the bee is in prison. He cannot get out. He suffocates and dies. Because of his too much attachment to enjoying smelling something nice. And the fish, the hunter knows how to catch the fish, because fishes like to eat. They can eat and eat and never even get fat. They're designed just to eat. So the fish's tongue wants to taste something very nice. So the fisherman puts the hook and take some nice food that he knows the fish will enjoy on that hook. And the ignorant fish thinks that my food has come, let me eat it. And as he eats it, he swallows it and he enjoys it. The more he enjoys it, the more it goes down and down into his belly, and then he's hooked. And then he is killed. Now a more intelligent fish, who's not a fool and not a paramhamsa fish, he sees that bait and he knows that this tastes very good, but I know there's a hook in it. I've heard Sridhar Maharaj and Jayadvaita Maharaj tell me about this hook. There's a hook behind this beautiful, succulent form of tasty pleasure. I want the pleasure, but I don't want the hook. What should I do? And the mind is bad. The senses are saying, eat it, don't worry about it. Enjoy now, tomorrow will never come. And besides that, these scriptures, how do you know that they were written by God? Maybe some man did it. Why should you dedicate your life to something you don't even know? Your intelligence knows, but because your sense once wanted to enjoy, they are giving you all this terrible misinformation. Actually, faith in God and faith in the scriptures is natural to everyone. It is the most logical way to live. But because the senses want to justify material enjoyment and sinful activity, they create so much propaganda to pollute your mind and your intelligence to have doubt in God and His Word. The fish is trapped because he wants to enjoy his tongue. And the deer, when the hunter wants to catch the deer, he knows the deers have big, big ears. They're called deer's ears. You have seen how big. You can look on the altar. Of all the people on the altar, the deers have big ears. Designed by material nature to enjoy the pleasure of sound vibration. The hunter blows his horn and plays sweet music, and the deer wants to get closer and closer to enjoy this nice concert. And when the deer comes, the hunter takes him away. In the same way, our ears want to enjoy material pleasure. We want to hear so much material subject matter, gossip, worldly news. Worldly news is sometimes useful to a devotee just to understand the miseries of material existence for our preaching purpose. But if we enjoy it, what kind of person enjoys reading the newspaper? Everybody! We wake up in the morning, the average person all over the world, and he's actually eager to read the paper. He enjoys it. Earthquake here, plague here, scandal here, murder here, economic crisis here. So many problems. What else do you read in the newspapers? Hardly anything else. People enjoy this. They enjoy music, simply glorifying the process of sense gratification. The king of all sense gratification is sex pleasure. Maituna agara. This means that people remain in this material world because they are shackled by the ropes of sex desire. Srila Prabhupada explained, if you have no sex desire, you are a liberated soul. There is gross and subtle sex. But Rishabhdev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has said, that the basic principle of all material bondage is the attraction between the sexes. So, what is the subject matter of practically all the materialistic music of the world? Previously, the most popular music was the music of the church or the music of the temple to glorify God. But as Kali Yuga progresses, what is the subject of music? It's practically all about materialistic love, which is nothing but sex life. There are so many names for this music. Country, western music, rock and roll music, jazz music, gazelle music. Everywhere in the world they have different names, but it's the same subject. I love you. But most songs are not like that. Most songs are, I love you, but you don't love me, so I'm miserable. It's terrible. The oceans will go dry and the stars will fall from the sky, but I will never give up my love for you. They say that time heals a broken heart, but time has stood still since we've been apart. Therefore, I'm simply miserable. Come back. I don't mind. You can embrace me, or you can reject me, or you can make me brokenhearted by trampling on me. But I will suffer and miserably. I am your servant, birth after birth after birth. This is perverted reflection. This is what they sing about. Everywhere in the world. And what? We're so attracted. Maya, death. Death is attracting by playing his horns with all of this music. It's taking our consciousness away from Krishna. Rishyashringa, he had the horn of a deer in his forehead. Rishya means deer. It is described in Bhagavatam, he was traversing the path of self-realization, but then beautiful young ladies started singing all sorts of materialistic music and attracted him away from his own father's ashram. And then there is elephant, Hare Krishna. The elephant is so big and so strong, but so weak to his senses. How does the hunter catch the elephant? He knows what is his strengths and what is his weaknesses. You cannot compete against the strength of an elephant, but you can easily destroy him by just knowing what is his weakness. The elephant has such a big, huge body, and every inch of his body is covered by thick, thick flesh, and every particle of that flesh is longing to touch something nice. Hare Krishna. So, the hunter makes a hole in the ground, covers it with grass and clay, and makes it look just like the ground. Then takes a big, beautiful female elephant. And the female element looks at the male element, and the elephant of the male species looks at the female species and becomes so much eager to enjoy touching her. But when he approaches the female element, she pushes him, and he falls into the deep, dark ditch where he is trapped helplessly. So we should not allow our consciousness to be destroyed by allowing the mind to focus on the objects of the senses. The Bhagavatam explains that a Paramhamsa, his consciousness is like an ocean, because actually in the soul is an ocean of transcendental happiness. Sri Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Krishna is an ocean of mercy. He is an ocean of pleasure. When we focus our mind on Krishna, we dive deep into an unlimited, fathomless ocean of transcendental happiness. However, if we do not fix our mind on Krishna, we are looking for happiness somewhere else. we must keep our minds always in the direction of that ocean, not toward the illusory mirages of this material world, which appear like the ocean, but there's no real pleasure. Only hot sand. It will not quench your thirst. This particular verse is describing how the Paramhamsas, they are swimming deeply in that ocean of transcendental ecstasy by performing wonderful, wonderful service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the materialistic people, they are still seeking happiness and actually thinking they're finding happiness, running after the mirages that the senses are putting before them, suffering birth after birth after birth, but because they still have the hope that they will enjoy, they think they're enjoying. A neophyte devotee is actually the only person who's realizing what is suffering. We know, because we have come in contact with the Lord and His devotees, that there is no real pleasure in material life. It's a hopeless pursuit. If I try to enjoy, I'm going to suffer, but I can't stop trying to enjoy. This is the situation of a neophyte devotee. We still have the inclination, but we also have the intelligence of what the result will be. And we're being dragged between the external energy and the internal energy. Krishna is saying no, and the senses are saying, yes, do it. You've done it so long. Do it again, one more time. Just try it. I'll protect you. Maya promises us, just enjoy. You are my devotee. I declare it boldly, I will always protect my devotee. Krishna says it, Maya says it in her own way. We should have faith in Krishna. Human life is to fix our faith in Krishna and to have no faith in our mind, in which Maya is so expertly presenting so much propaganda and misinformation to delude us, to steal away our hearts from Krishna. So human life is meant for tapasya. Tapo divyam putra kayena sadvam sudyedyasyam brahma sokyan vananta. Because that tapasya brings real happiness. And what is tapasya? For a transcendental realized soul, there's little tapasya. He loves to wake up and come for the Mangalarti and dance before the deity. He loves to chant the holy names constantly. He's tasting the nectar of Krishna in his name. He loves to serve the Lord. And a materialist loves to get up and listen to all kinds of mundane music and see all sorts of mundane television and eat all sorts of mundane hog-like food and touch all sorts of mundane pleasures. But a devotee, he's not tasting the sweet nectar of Krishna consciousness. He still has a taste for material enjoyment, but he has to somehow or other follow the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness. That is called tapasya. That is the path of perfection. Human life is especially meant for tapasya, to say no to sense gratification and yes to service. But the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Unless we keep our mind and senses always engaged in Krishna's service, Maya will undoubtedly drag it away from us and again bring us down to the platform of the animals. So this guilt that was within our heart is actually the mercy of Krishna. If that guilt goes away, we become animal. The guilt of enjoying material life goes away if you're a fool or if you're a Paramhamsa. Until you attain that stage, it's a benediction. We should cultivate it. It's not that we should always be miserably guilty. But we should always take it as a very serious warning to keep us on the right path and be blissful. We see devotees, even though they're struggling to control their senses, even though they're battling against their minds, even though the whole society is criticizing them in so many ways, when they come together for kirtan, they're blissful, their faces are beaming, they're smiling, their eyes are shining, their arms are raised, and they're joyfully chanting the holy name. You will never see materialistic people like this. I have not seen. No one has seen. They may put on a show of being happy. But devotees, when they come to the kirtan, when they actually immerse their consciousness in the rasa of that kirtan, they become genuinely unbounded in their happiness. Even though their life is such a battle, so many frustrations trying to overcome their weaknesses. But we must continue to fight that battle. And it's a blissful fight if we keep nice association of devotees, if we take nice prasad, if we have nice kirtan, if we come to nice harikatha, if we do not behold the beautiful darshan of the deities, if we smell the wonderful flowers and incense of the deities, our senses are totally engaged. If we're engaging in helping others to become Krishna conscious, those of you who have preached or distributed books know there is no ecstasy as much as experiencing giving someone else the mercy of Krishna. You just become beside yourself with joy. Even though you may have so many material desires still in your heart you're fighting against, it's a higher taste. You cannot find that in the material world anywhere. We have to continuously be performing the austerity of keeping our mind and senses engaged in the source of that higher taste, which is the nine processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing the glories of the Lord and chanting His holy name. Stop beating your head against the glass to try to find the material enjoyment like the moth. Another quality of a different type of bee, there's two types of bees. One is the Madhukari bee that just goes, takes the nectar of the essence of each flower and goes to the next. Doesn't save anything. And the other bee stores more and more honey in his hive. Hare Krishna. Just wants to accumulate more and more and more, because the bee is thinking, I have to save enough for the spring season. And then the winter's coming, I have to save more for that. So many considerations. But ultimately, what happens? The bee works like a bee. Busy bee. He's busy, 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 busy. He's so busy. His whole life is in this busy. And then what happens? He spends the whole existence accumulating honey, and then the beekeeper just takes it all away. Puts it in jars and gives it to everybody else. You may know, every time you eat honey, some bee who's been working his whole life has lost his whole life savings. And you're just enjoying it like anything for a couple of rupees. Similarly, the bee, we should not be like this.
to be or not to be? That is the question. Which be? Anyways, we should behave ourselves. So, another quality of be is the good be. He just goes and takes the essence from every flower, doesn't concern himself with the rest of the flower. Therefore, he's always free. Similarly, knowledge. A devotee is not concerned with mundane academic knowledge. Even of the scriptures, devotee is only concerned with the essence of pure, unalloyed devotional service to God. And we want to extract wherever we could find that nectar. But those who just read so many books because they want to be so learned, they are compared to ass, just carrying around a big, big burden. The ass has this big, big burden on his back and he's foaming at the mouth. He's suffering. And if someone says, let me take the burden off, he says, no, don't take it off. It took me so long to attain this burden. But the bee can fly anywhere and everywhere because he just takes the nectar. Our acharyas explain we should not accumulate too much materialistic knowledge. It's just a big, big burden. We should just accumulate the essence of knowledge. And that is that we are the eternal servants of Krishna. Krishna is the all-attractive personality of Godhead, and we will accept whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject whatever is unfavorable. And we will study that philosophy very deeply that teaches us what is favorable and what is unfavorable. So we should learn from the bees and from the moths and from the fish, the deer and the elephants. How Maya is everywhere trying to trap us through the mind and the senses. So let us always keep our senses busy for Krishna. By hearing, by chanting Krishna's holy names, by associating with Krishna's devotees. And even though we may be in that middle stage section where we are suffering and we know it, as Jayadvaita Maharaj explains, it's a very critical stage of human existence. Because you realize that you're unhappy and you look down. And when you see down, you see so many ignorant, animalistic, materialistic people who are saying, I am happy. And then you look up and you see the Paramhamsas and they are happy. And we have our choice. We can't stay where we are. We either have to strive to go up to enjoy the happiness of the Paramhamsas, or we become envious and we strive to come down again to the happiness of the ignorant fools. We've been puna punas charavata charavananam. We've tasted what the fools have tasted birth after birth. There's no more flavor. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of material enjoyment. That one time someone asked his friend, I want to taste what is sugar cane. Where do I find it? He said, it looks just like the bamboo stick. So he went and found a bamboo stick and started chewing and chewing and chewing on this bamboo stick, trying to get some flavor out of it. And some imagination that, this is very sweet. But there's nothing there. Similarly, material enjoyment looks like real enjoyment.
But real enjoyment is in the sugarcane lotus feet of Krishna, not in the dry bamboo of this material world. It is illusory. It is Maya's false promise that you will find sweet juice in a bamboo stick. But we're chewing and sucking on bamboo sticks birth after birth after birth. But Srila Prabhupada has come to say, this is where the real nectar is that you're longing to achieve. Anandam buddhivardhanam pratipadam punam ratashvadhanam. However difficult it may be, let us always keep our minds looking up, following in the footsteps of the Paramhamsas, seeking the higher taste, which can be received in this age of Kali Yuga through the congregational chanting of Krishna's name. Today we would like to request Nartaki Mataji to present her transcendental message to us. You see, she prepared a nice message to be presented before Jagannath's Rath Yatra, but she came a little late and she did not have the opportunity. But we would like her to give this message to us just now. Please send the microphone to Nartaki Mataji.
I speak so fluently that I remember all the words.
Please stand up and speak.
Hare Krishna.
Very well. The worst that happens is we all laugh at you.
Okay.
But that will make us happy.
About Kushinath, abhi mandir mein rehne ke liye aur aapka sang milne ke liye aur khas kar main khushi hoon Jagannath Rath Yatra ko how do you say to participate? Bhag le sakte hain. Is Jagannath Rath Yatra 2000 varsh ka mahotsav hai aur Jagannath Puri mein हर वर्ष माना जाता है और श्रील प्रभुपाद हमारा गुरु महाराज ऐसी भक्ति वरन स्वामी कृष्ण कृपा मूर्ति ऐसी भक्ति वरन स्वामी प्रभुपाद की कृपा से हम अभी 30 साल से पहले ये जगन्नाथ रथ यात्रा पश्चिम देशों में भी माना जाता है और मैं लॉस एंजल्स इससे पहले मैं लॉस एंजल्स में रहती थी और एक इन ब्रह्मा पुराण में कहा गया है कि ये व्यक्ति भगवान के रथ यात्रा उत्सव को देखते हैं तथा भगवान के स्वागतार्थ उठ खड़ा होता है उसके सारे पाप नष्ट हो जाते हैं तथा इस जीवन की समाप्ति पर उसे भगवत धाम की प्राप्ति होती है। Oops, sorry. हमारा प्रिय गुरु महाराज दिव्य कृष्णा कृपा मूर्ति ऐसी भक्ति वरंत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद Śrīla Prabhupāda ji ki asim kripa se Jagannath ji ki rath yatra ka ye utsav lagbhag 30 saal se pehle 30 saal se sabhi paschim deshon mein manaya jata hai aur hazaron sankhya mein log isme bhag lete hain main kai saal Los Angeles California mein rahi hoon wahan prasanna mahasagar ke kinare par hi rath yatra ka utsav hua karta tha sagar ke kinare se rat ko khinch kar sab bhakt log Venice naam ke mashhoor is ek naya shabd mere liye hai so to so log se puch rahi thi mashhoor sagar tat par banaye hue pandal mein